And welcome everyone to the campus of New England College in beautiful Henniker, New Hampshire for the inaugural presidential podcast. I'm Josh McKelvin, sitting in with the aforementioned president of New England College, Dr. Wayne Lesperance. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Josh. This is pretty amazing. Our first ever podcast. We're going to talk about a lot of fun things, and I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, I mean, truth be told, there's one on the editing room floor that I kind of botched as far as the recording is concerned, but you know, we worked out the bugs, and I think this one's going to even be better than the one that will eventually be a historical item, I would think.
Boy, you're setting that bar pretty high right now. That's a little scary for me. But yeah, we had a practice run, and now this is it. We're ready to go. Prime time.
Right. So let's talk about the goal of the podcast. You were named president of the college. Congratulations.
Thanks.
A few months back, prior to that, you were interim president. So you've been running the show for a while. What do you hope to accomplish with a discussion like this?
This is, for me, an opportunity to keep my hand in what's going on around us here in the Granite State, what's going on around us here on this campus. That is the first in the nation presidential primary. We can keep talking politics. We can talk about leadership issues. We can talk about anything folks want us to talk about, and we'd love to hear from you about that. But really, two guys that love politics as much as we do, sort of continuously watching the landscape, the shifting sands of politics. This is our chance to sort of offer some thoughts and opinions on what we see, and I hope people have fun with it.
And as far as higher academia goes, you're kind of a celebrity president. I mean, you're well known in New Hampshire. You are, especially among political circles. Reporters know you for your insight into New Hampshire politics, the first in the nation primary. So you're certainly no stranger. So we already have some built-in name ID, and I get to ride that coattail, so I appreciate that. Let's talk about the first in the nation primary.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm sitting next to the former political director of WMUR, and if that's not a plum position in the world of politics, I don't know what is.
So it was a great gig.
I'm on your coattails, I think, my friend.
This is going to be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to
it. Right.
And we can give our opinion. That's the one thing that I never really was able to do in the media. I mean, I know that's what happens every day in the media now. But I used to subscribe to the old school.
You're the one that didn't do it, huh? Just the one.
Well, I mean, I was careful about it. And I just look at it now. And this is another topic that we can spend a whole podcast on is the problems with today's media. But let's deliver information best we can. Let people know when it is our opinion, when it's fact, and let them form their own determinations. But that's just my philosophy.
Sure.
Let's talk about the first in the nation primary. Every cycle, it's under siege. This time is no different. But is it different in your mind as far as the threat to the New Hampshire primary and our place in the process?
Yeah, it is different. It is absolutely different. So this is my 25th year. It'll be 25 at the end of July here in New Hampshire from Virginia. Never saw presidential candidates in Virginia growing up. Here, you run into them all the time during the primary process. You know, what I think about in terms of where we are today and where we have been is there have always been those that wanted the first in the nation status, right? And I remember when it was Michigan, I remember when it was Nevada, Florida for about 15 minutes, all sort of worked at it, never got there. Individual states trying to jump the calendar, was not successful. But what we're seeing now is very different. We're seeing the party, the Democratic National Committee, say, we are changing the process. We are going to punish New Hampshire because it does not check off demographics the way they want us to, and we're going to reward South Carolina. This is the argument. That is a different kind of threat. It's problematic for 100 reasons, not the least of which is Washington, D.C. is trying to tell states how to conduct their business. That's not okay. We all ought to be upset by that, regardless of who we're talking about. But it represents a different kind of threat. They can. It is within their power to punish campaigns that decide to campaign in New Hampshire. And New Hampshire, as far as we know, talking to the Secretary of State, will be first on the calendar. We expect the candidates to come. If they choose not to come, that's a problem for us. If they choose to come and get punished by the DNC, that's a problem for us.
And when you talk about punishment, just for those who don't get into the granular activities like we do, what do you mean punished?
So if you win a primary or you place in a primary that it's not a winner-take-all system on the Democratic side, then you get delegates out of it. They could take those delegates away. They could refuse to seat those delegates. They have a lot of options, but that's the one that most people talk about. So in that circumstance, you're really denying somebody the results of their hard work in trying to win or place or show in a state like New Hampshire or Iowa or whoever is out of sequence in the calendar.
In a large sense, though, it is symbolic as far as taking away the delegates. Yeah. Yes. I mean, but the election results still stand. It just creates a whole can of worms that we shouldn't have to get into. And I agree with you that this threat is different. New Hampshire, sure, is always going to be criticized for being too small, not diverse enough, which, by the way, New England College just happens to be the most diverse student body in all of New England. I had to throw that in there because a lot of people might be surprised by that. But, yeah, I think the media plays a role now, getting back to the media, as far as policing this. If you're going to let the DNC or the RNC dictate how the, you know, selection process is run and their goal is to win campaigns, might as well just throw the democratic process out the window and let the biggest bag of money come because that's who they're going to support.
Well, and so that's where we all ought to be offended, right? And whether you're a Granite Stater or you're in California or you're in Iowa, where, whatever state you're from, what we see happening is a national political party is making the decision. The media is making a decision. What's good for ratings? What's good for their on-air delivery? And we're mostly talking about television here. It's all of these other groups that are making decisions about how our elections ought to be conducted. And it's not we the people. It's not the citizenry, right? It's not the state governments who are responsible for their own local elections. So instead, you know, we are conceding this power to these organizations that don't necessarily have our interests at heart. At the end of the day, if the DNC wants to pick a candidate to be president, they're going to pick the person that has the greatest name recognition, the greatest amount of money in their bank account, and who they think has the greatest chance of winning, right? Now, you know, if that were really the litmus test for who gets to be the president, we would never have seen a Bill Clinton on the Democratic side. I'm not sure we would have seen a Barack Obama on the Democratic side, right? And so, you know, we the people, by seeing these candidates and testing them in the greatest traditions of New Hampshire, putting them in a room in front of everyday ordinary citizens, not talking heads, not media personalities, not party hacks, but regular citizens who have to get up every day, go to work, pay the bills, send their kids to school, know what they want out of their everyday life. By putting them in front of those folks and answering those tough questions, we vet them. That's what we do very well. New Hampshire voters vote at a rate higher than just about every other state in the country. We take our primary very seriously. We are very civically engaged. Why wouldn't you want a state like that to be first? That checks all the boxes. Our greatest argument for us are those things.
Because I agree with you, and you said it a moment ago, as far as the parties are concerned, the National Committee, they could care less.
Right.
They want to win the election, and how they get there doesn't really matter.
And in fact, they don't really want a long primary. They don't want a lot of questions asked because there's too many chances for somebody to do something wrong or to spend too much money on the primary. Right. They want to get right to the general. So their interests are at odds with our interests as everyday citizens. Why would we concede this to them? It's a mistake.
It's a huge mistake. And there's an education. I'm glad we're talking about this because the next generation needs to know why this matters.
Right.
If you really want to have a choice, if you really want to have a voice, that's kind of, you know, that rhymes. You don't have a choice or a voice. But you got to be educated. You got to understand why. This isn't just tradition. There is a process here. And yes, we vet them, but we also make them better, I believe.
Right.
The candidates come here not really familiar with intimacy in terms of dealing with people. And in New Hampshire, you have to.
Yep.
And you either do it or you don't. And if you can't, well, that's reflected in the outcome.
Does it
decide the presidential election? No, Harry Reid, it doesn't.
Right.
But we make the candidates better and prepare them for the national stage. So let's keep talking about this.
Sure.
But let's talk about some of the local or some of the more topical issues here. Starting with Donald Trump, how can we not? So the indictment out of the Manhattan DA's office, does this hurt Donald Trump, help Donald Trump? What do you think?
It both, right? In the short term, he raised, I think, $8 million initially off of this. His supporters, they are ride or die for Donald Trump. And an indictment is going to be spun as a politically motivated event. I don't know if the DA should have done this or not, to be honest. I mean, I've read it, but I'm not a lawyer. And you know, everybody should be accountable to the law. Nobody should be above the law. But in doing this, from a just purely political point of view, you have empowered Donald Trump in a way he didn't have before. And I think it remains to be seen whether or not this is going to matter, hurt him, or help him. But he was able to fundraise off of it. He will forever have the distinction of having been the only former president to be indicted. And, you know, I don't know that he cares about that. I don't know that that factors for him at all.
Over FEC violations, which really doesn't, you know, carry a whole lot of weight with your typical American. They really worried about campaign finance law.
No.
And most, all the other things that are out there.
Yeah, most don't understand it. Most
don't
get it. I mean, when you turn this into he paid a person to be quiet about an illicit affair.
A porn star, sure.
You know, I mean, I think that's cringeworthy, but I don't know a lot of people that are saying, my God, that's like robbing a bank or you know, you killed somebody or something.
who tried to overturn the results of an election.
Which to me is a much more serious
thing. So do I.
And those are pending charges and activities as well. But, you know, so what was accomplished by this? You know, folks on the left had got to have that moment of Donald Trump doing the perp walk and all that. Great. But he fundraised a ton off of this, and I think his support is even more solidified as a result.
I agree. And I think that it makes it even more difficult.
So it's more difficult, for sure.
It is more difficult. And I think it's more difficult for the prosecutor down in Georgia, whoever's looking at the comments made to the Secretary of State there, find me 11,000 votes to bring more credibility, because it's going to look like more of a witch hunt
the more we go.
So we'll see. And, of course, he announces a week before this even happened, hey, this is going to happen to me, gets max benefit out of the publicity he's in. On the front page of every paper for a whole week.
That's right. So he gets a lot out of it. I do think this affects him. I do think in his own head. I mean, you can see, you know, one of the ways you know this mattered to him is how much he fought to prevent it from happening, right? And so I do think that historical moment is not lost on him, and I do think he wonders how this affects his chances down the road. But right now he's still the 800 pound gorilla in the Republican primary, and to beat him, you're going to have to really take on that big guy, and he's not shrinking away from it.
But they are coming to New Hampshire. There's people testing the waters. We'll talk more about that. But on the other side, a lot of people wondering whether Joe Biden was going to get into this race. Kind of signals his intention this week to, well, not exactly a national political reporter.
Yeah, Al Roker. So, you know, the cloudy with a chance of rain, and oh, by the way, Joe Biden's running for president. I don't get that, but, you know, what do I know?
He's sitting president. He's doing something right.
He's right. I mean, I mean, it's amusing and it's a little crazy and, you know, and it's, I don't know, a little awkward, but, that's not a conventional way to announce reelection. And he didn't formally do it, but he certainly gave every indication.
Are you surprised? I mean, if that's the case, given his age and on the other side, Donald Trump, not that far behind, I think he would be almost 80 if he were to win a second term when he's inaugurated.
I think, though, that Joe Biden, and this is purely my opinion,
sure,
I think Joe Biden shows a little more signs of age than Donald Trump does, at least openly. And I think the fact that members of his own party have been outspoken about whether he should run or not adds to this, right? So, you know, what will he or won't he isn't, you know, really the public speculating. It's the members of his own party. And really, are you up to it? Being president is an, you know, incredibly difficult job. You can see, and I've seen this in poli-sci studies, just pictures, a picture review of when they start and when they leave, and how much that time in office ages them. It's an incredible amount of stress that probably nobody that we know has ever experienced. It's got to take a toll. So I think it's fair to wonder, you know, do you really want this? Are you really up for this? And what we know we need in a world that is as dangerous as the world we're in now, with the challenges we face as a country, we need the sharpest of the sharp. I don't know that that's Donald Trump. I don't know that that's Joe Biden. I don't know who that is at this point. But what's cool about where we are right now is we're going to get to kick the tires on an awful lot of people that want to be president, and we'll ask them these questions, and we'll see if they're up to snuff.
And it appears that he will face, at least at the outset, a primary challenge, the sitting president will, Marianne Williamson, taking part in our town hall series where we have a number of candidates actually going to be here that will have been here or will be here over the course of the spring. Vivek, help me with the last name.
Ramaswamy.
Yeah, on the Republican side, Marianne Williamson, Chris Christie's coming, Nikki Haley's coming, Mayor Tom Suarez, Miami.
Yeah.
He's testing the waters.
Francis Suarez,
excuse me. So they're doing their
deal. And we've got asks out to Asa Hutchinson. We've got Chris Christie coming. I mean, it's started. I mean, this is for me, you know, this is why I came here from Virginia, right? First of the nation, the Super Bowl of politics is right here. After 24 years of this, I've seen a lot of campaigns, met a lot of candidates, I've met a lot of presidents. Man, the experience that our students get to have, that our state gets to have, is pretty darn special.
It is. It's awesome. We're not inventing the town hall here, but we're getting him out of Manchester, which I think there's some value to. I mean, they'll travel around if they take New Hampshire seriously, but getting him to Henniker to have these discussions with people who maybe don't get to Manchester, they get to take part in the FITN, which is just fantastic.
One of the hardest things I've ever had to convince campaigns of is that we're not in Vermont, that we're not, you know, hours away. We're a short ride away from the Manchester airport, right? You can do more than one thing. And this part of the state often gets short shrifted, frankly, the Connecticut River Valley and over. So the fact that we do as well as we do, it's because they know when they come, they're going to be treated respectfully. There's no cancel culture going on here. They're not going to be heckled down. They're going to have their chance. They're going to get asked tough questions, but that's part of the deal. And if you can't handle tough questions from college students, probably shouldn't be running for president, right? And so I think we do this very well. And you're right. This isn't Manchester. It's not the same old, you know, going to the same spots. We're giving them an opportunity to meet real people. We invite the entire community outside of our college to come. So we'll fill our Simon Center great room with citizens and voters for the primary, and these candidates will have a chance to make their pitch.
And who knows? Maybe we'll have one of those primary moments. I paid for this microphone.
Oh, man, Reagan. That's one I wish I could have been here for.
Oh, me too. Me too.
Special.
Yeah. So speaking of tough questions, I am going to ask you one that wasn't on the agenda. But it's okay. I mean, a lot of people, you know, with all the challenges that we face and what we see in the news and the violence and things like that, people wonder about the next generation and what our future looks like. You have an opportunity to view and interact with our future every day.
Yeah.
What do you make of the next generation that's coming up? Are they smarter than us? They got a handle on it, more mature. I mean, you're an optimistic guy by nature, but do they help in that area?
I'll tell you a quick story. When I first came to teach here, you remember the movie Saving Private Ryan?
Of course.
And I remember going to the theater and seeing that as a brand new college professor. And I remember coming out of there thinking, man, that generation, how special were they? And our generation now, we could never live up to a challenge like that, right? Myself included, the people around it, I was really worried that we had lost our way as Americans. I remember thinking that very clearly. And then 9/11 happened. And I looked at those firefighters that ran into those buildings and the police officers and all the EMTs, all those first responders. And how old were they? They were young men and women in their early 20s, just starting out in life. And without fear or self-concern, they rushed into harm's way. If you look at the average Lance Corporal, if you look at the PFC, right, these are young kids. And when you look at what they have signed up to do and the places we send them, again, to go into harm's way wearing their country's uniform, that American spirit, that call to service is as real as it gets. And I see it very much in our young people today. I have had my mind completely changed. They are so much smarter than we are. They have been exposed to so much more than we did when we were their age. Everything from the fact that they have access to a supercomputer on their phones,
right,
to the amount of violence they've had to see in their lives. In my day, it was you have to have a fire drill. Now they have to have active shooter drills. And they have just had to experience much more than we do in an environment that was less certain, right? And so I do believe that we will benefit from these young people when they get to the age of being decision makers. And I am optimistic, and I do have confidence in them. You know, are there issues that we argue about on a daily basis that make me crazy? Yeah, absolutely. And we will talk about a lot of those on here, I'm sure. I think that's not unique to this generation. So I remain optimistic. I love the job I have because I get to be around young people. And for me, being at a college is an opportunity to always learn. And I'm learning from them as much as I'm learning from anybody else.
And the impact of what you do every day is great because you're helping to shape young minds. And who knows? Well,
absolutely.
Who might come out of the next graduating class or the one after that.
That's right.
But collectively, all right, so we have about 2 minutes to go. I do have to read a quick public service announcement. Red Cross blood donation appeal. I'm going to try reading that all over again. Your one blood donation can help save the lives of multiple people and make a difference in the lives of others. Give blood through the American Red Cross to help hospital patients and others. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or simply visit redcrossblood.org today. It certainly does make a difference. The blood drives are only filling a need that always exists. So please take part in it. All right, final question of our inaugural podcast, Pop Culture. Rolling Stone recently came out with its top 100 TV series of all times.
Yeah.
In your opinion, who should sit at number one?
This is so hard. This is really unfair. I mean, there's so many great series. So one that they identified is The Sopranos, and I loved The Sopranos. That was must-see appointment television watching. But if I had to be honest, because I've probably watched this through Netflix a dozen times at this point, West Wing is my favorite series of all time.
And we didn't even talk about West Wing. Ooh. You just gave me a moment of pause.
There
was a lot of chill, you know, spine tingle moments in West Wing, even from the open.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Know?
The music.
The music gets you.
Yeah.
That's true. I was going to say Breaking Bad.
We could use the music for bumper music for this podcast.
I think we can use 12 seconds of it
All right.
before there's copyright. I'll get into that.
So Breaking Bad, Josh, you know, I've never seen that, and I'm a little embarrassed to admit that, so I guess I got to go watch that.
There'll be a quiz on the next podcast. We'll do the first season of Breaking Bad.
I'll do my homework.
Yeah, so yeah, for listeners, my email is josh@mckelvenstrategies, McElveen, strategies.com. Send us a question to ask Wayne, Dr. Lesperance, about the first season of Breaking Bad for the next podcast to make sure he's been doing his homework.
Oh, boy.
All right. Was this fun?
This is going to be good. Yeah, can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, we're going to do it again. So we'll be doing this on a monthly basis unless the news cycle calls for more. Until then, thanks for joining us for the Presidential Podcast. I'm Josh McElveen for Dr. Wayne Lesperance. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much.
All right, bye, guys.